We're looking this morning at a prudent man. The Bible starts off with a prudent man foreseeth evil and hideth himself. But the simple pass on and are punished. So this is a prudent message this morning. I don't expect it to go. I really don't. I don't sound mean to sound negative. I don't think anybody's going to do anything with this thing. I hope somebody would. It's one of those messages where the people who need to hear it that I know aren't going to hear it. And the ones that don't need to hear it, the first part of it anyway, because it has something to do with homeschooling. It really isn't about homeschooling. I've been taking a class, an online class, and it's about learning disabilities and difficult things students have and all that stuff. And I got a chapter on the parents. And I just read some things here that made me realize what's going on. You know, the world government doesn't want us to homeschool. We know all that kind of stuff. And I just want to do a warning here for homeschoolers that really care, because something's happening. And I don't think most homeschoolers are going to recognize this thing. You know, it's easy to fight the enemy when you know who the enemy is and you see how they work and how they do stuff. This is being done very underhandedly, and I'm not sure many homeschoolers anymore are aware of this, let alone us who's trying to change our lives to live like Paul's manner of life would be. I'm not sure we are aware of what's happening to us. So let's see if we can't make something out of this thing. Here's a couple quick quotes here. It says here in the little notes here, it says the NIA and all that kind of stuff, NEA, I mean, have made parent involvement in the education of their children a crucial aspect of every child's education. Now, that sounds important to people, but think about it. The NEA has made parent involvement. Parents have been involved since the beginning of time. They have made parent involvement a crucial aspect of every child's education. Right, like they're the ones coming up with this stuff. You see what I mean? Another paragraph says this. Another quote says this. Parents, long known to be the child's first teachers, now took their rightful place in their child's education. So if you get involved in public school as a parent, see, now you're in your rightful place. Here's another one. These all talk about government initiatives and laws and stuff. This one is called Active Accessibility. These initiatives support parental involvement. So what I read in here was they're excited that parents are getting involved, and they're saying some things that are making parents think that, well, hey, they must want us now. And you'll see my point here. Here's another one. Implicit in the above laws were the rights and responsibilities of teachers. It's a right, and it's the teacher's responsibility to be involved with our kids at home. The regulations recommend that a team of professionals be responsible for conducting the child's educational assessment. These are laws. Okay? Here's another quote here. Here it is. These laws, legislations, highlight the rather basic idea that we, educators, allied professionals, administrators, and parents, are there only for the needs of the children. So then it says it made good sense to work together and tap into each other's undoubted wealth of expertise. You know, they've never cared what the parents have ever said in the past. Now they say they are. I'll show you what I'm talking about here in a minute. Here's another quote. Hardly one of these educational panaceas, whatever that, had neglected to pay at least lip service to the importance of including parents in school activities. Let us now jump a quarter of a century and look at the laws, da-da-da-da. They have both included extremely strong and supportive statements on parent participation. Okay, they're not going to force it. They're making laws that say we need to have the parents involved. Oh, by the way, you'll be involved at the school, not at your home. I hope, people are going to realize this. It says here, teachers have accepted this. What was that beat for? What's the matter with my phone here? Okay, charge. Teachers have accepted this as part of their professional role function. What's that? Letting parents into their teaching and planning and stuff. For the relationship to be effective, teachers and parents, for the relationship to be effective and meaningful, each of the participants must be able to see that there will be benefits in his or her being involved. So they're saying we have to accept the parents, kind of a thing. For partnership to provide the expected benefits to each of the members, it is vital that there be shared information, decision-making, action, and responsibility from each member. This requires mature interpersonal skills and when shared with trust. I get tons of quotes. I'm going to skip most of them because there's no point in it. But and here's the one. Listen to this now. Yet about a quarter of a century ago, such a notion of teachers and parents working together seemed difficult to comprehend. Parents were welcome to the shop, but the classroom was out of bounds. The writers referred to in this chapter were all pioneers in this area of parent-teacher participation. Their writings challenged both teachers and parents. They inspired professionals. They showed legislators the need for this partnership. Do you see what's going on here? They say that the people are thinking that they're starting to accept the parents. No, they're just letting them into the school. So if they couldn't get the kids in the school, let's get the parents back to the school, then we get the kids back. Now listen to this part right here. We all salute all of them as well as the pioneering, unreferenced teachers and parents in all countries who made this happen. Today, legislation has mandated parent-teacher interaction. Congress and the Senate are alert to further initiatives that would enhance this relationship. Teachers and administrators across the country are all working and experimenting, looking for new and better ways to enrich the partnership and facilitate the learning experience of the child. Right. If I got anything here, let's see here. Talks about how the parent and the teacher have to work together. They share information. They share decision-making. They share active involvement and share responsibility. If they do this, they become a team. You know, one of the most important requirements is good communication skills. And it just goes on. And I'm reading that, and I'm thinking, you know what's going to happen here? They're not going to just make a law that says you can't homeschool your children. They're going to say, we're going to help you. And we need to have you come to school to help us for your child. And we'll share in the decisions. We'll share. And my comment is this. I think a lot of homeschoolers are going to be thrilled. I do. And let me get into the sermon thing, and you see what I'm talking about here a little bit here. I think and it's more than just homeschoolers. So this isn't even about homeschooling necessarily. Let me give you some thoughts here, though, from what I've seen. This is a huge compromise for the government to talk like they are. The guy even said there were days where we fought them, but now we'll bring them all together. I mean, in other words, get them out of your house, back to the school. We can all work together on this thing. So there's a compromise taking place. They compromise hugely. Now, will homeschoolers compromise? Well, I have no doubt that they will. Now, listen here. What I'm seeing right now in homeschoolers is they're blowing a good thing. Now, I know Floyd, you homeschool, and Gunkles, you want to, and Brian, and Ed, you know, all this kind of stuff. There's people out there that homeschool. I'm not necessarily talking about you folks. This is stuff I've seen as I've been around the homeschoolers a lot, even since we first lived in South Dakota. They're blowing a good thing. They're going to lose this thing, this freedom. They're too busy to do the job. They're not taking it seriously. They want the kids out of public school, but they don't want to do what they have to do to teach them in their home. And I don't believe that there's much time left. I think that we're just about run out of time. And they're going to do this very, very slyly, very subtly. It can't be a sudden law. It just demands it. Why do I think I can talk like this? When I'm saying, who am I, the homeschool expert? Well, listen here. When I first started in public school, the teachers were called change agents. I remember preaching about that back in Washington, about change agents. The teachers are the ones that are going to change the children. Now, today, the materials in the school lessons, the school meetings and stuff, they call the kids the change agents. It's up to the kids to make their life go the way that the kids will be taught how to go. The parents aren't going to change it. Now, sad to say, there are some homeschoolers out there that are doing such a lousy, rotten, stinking job that, yes, the kids are going to have to be the ones to make the move, and we already know, some of us, that that's not hardly possible. So, you know, in some respects, as you grow up, you need to take charge of your life. Right, we're talking about little kids here. I've seen it in the school. I'm working in a school now, and I see what they're talking about, and I'm trying to get people to realize we're not concerned about no child left behind. My observation is that we ought to have a rule or some kind of a thing or other that says no child kept behind. Because all the kids that can excel and do good, they're being kept back. I guarantee they're being kept back. And they're doing this whole emphasis is on learning disability kids. They're learning on disobedient kids. The whole emphasis is being put on getting them caught up. In the meantime, the good kids, the challenging kids, that can study and do all that kind of stuff, they're being left behind. They're kept from being, they're being kept behind, right. It's already going on in Georgia. The school district wants to start helping. Yeah, see, and this is where this is going here. I'm glad you recognize that. The homeschoolers, less and less time is being spent on schooling. You know, I get so frustrated when somebody says, you know, if you homeschool, you can have your kids done by 12, and they can play the rest of the day. That's not the purpose. The purpose is to have more time, less kids, get more done, and get a better education, not get a normal, crummy education on less time. It just irritates me to hear that stuff. Like I said, parents are too busy. Dads don't understand the importance it is for a lady to have planning time and correcting. And okay, so it's one kid, two kids, maybe four kids, maybe five. But the dads put all these things that the ladies have to have the house cleaned, the dishes done, the car tires changed, the yard mowed, all this kind of stuff. Well, he's out there earning the dollar. And their schooling is suffering. So there's tons of things I've seen. And I've been involved with homeschooling since way back when. We graduated our kids both from homeschooling. My wife did like 99.9% of the work, so I can't brag on that thing. I have tried in the past to be involved with homeschoolers and to help homeschoolers, but all I did was offend them. I was able to see that the lack of involvement from the parent, here, read this and study this, here, do this booklet, and just shut up and do this booklet. When you're done, you can go play. I mean, that's what they do all over the place. The moms are too busy, they're selfish, they want pleasures, they want projects they have to do around the house as part of homeschooling, you know. No, it's not. You've got to teach these kids stuff. I see a tremendous lack of authority from the parents because they don't want to make their little children mad at them. I mean, just tons of stuff I could gripe about. But like I say, this is not about that. I just want people to hear what's going on. And the same thing is going on with us when it comes to wanting to be a Paul type of a Christian. So this isn't going to do any good for homeschoolers. I realize that. And if I care about this kind of stuff, it's going to frustrate me to no end. I cannot break the trend of the apostasy. That's not my point again. It was part of the falling away. It's part of the world government thing to take those kids and control them. I feel bad for people that have young kids and babies like gunkles and stuff. It's going to be so tough for you to help those kids grow up and know the Lord and know the Bible and all that kind of stuff. It's going to be so challenging. I see so many worthless, absolutely worthless homeschool situations. I see kids that should be in sixth grade, are in fifth, are in fourth, are in third. They still can't read. I know homeschoolers that can't talk. Because mom and dad tell them, now say thank you, now do this and do that. And the kids can't think. They can't think till they get out. And then when they get out, they start thinking. They make all these stupid decisions based on fun and pleasure and the way the world snags them. Because they're tired of it. The fact that the kids, when they get out of homeschool today, most kids are not happy that they were homeschooled. Now why? What's going on here? Let's see here. I just penciled out notes here this morning. For those homeschoolers that hear this and are out there being serious homeschoolers, and I know there's a bunch of serious homeschoolers out there, this folly that they're part of here, this modern Christianity, because that's what's being taught in a lot of homeschools, it's just going to do a couple of things. It's going to teach children how to continue the folly when they get older. So they'll continue to produce more deceivers and liars. They will eventually hate God because they're going to find out that all this homeschooling years, all these punishments and all these memorizations, all this kind of stuff didn't do them a lick of good. God was never there to them. You know, the prayers weren't answered and all this kind of stuff that we know isn't going to go on. They're being taught a false gospel that they hate God. So there's another product of homeschoolers. Or homeschooling parents are softening because they're wearing out. They're tired. They're susceptible to this compromise that's going on here. Now, there are those diehards that are out there, but that doesn't bother Satan any because they're just going to pass on this lie of this folly of modern Christianity. So that's not a big deal. This other thing that's taking place, this compromise, is parents are ready for this. They're ready for some help. And the school's talking, like you say in Georgia, the school is talking in such a manner that people are going to go, oh, now we're glad you see our side. Yes, let's get together and let's figure out what to do for our kids. And I'm sad, I said this back in Washington. It made some people mad. They didn't understand it. But there are some kids that need public school because their home school is going so bad. And I know in a public school they're going to be taught false religion, they're going to be taught anti-God, evolution, and the whole thing. But they're doing such a lousy job that those kids need some kind of direction. They need some kind of learning skills on reading. They need to know what it is to not fight back with the teacher. They need to know that they're not the most important little creature in the world when you've got 25 other kids in there. But along with that comes all these social activities because that's all they care about and blah, 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 blah. But isn't that a terrible thing to say that some of these kids need public school? Their parents are doing such a bad job. Well, what's my point this morning? I'm still not going to do any good to talk like this. They're not going to hear this and go, oh, you know, you're right. We need to put our kids in public schools. We're not doing a very good job. No, they're not going to do that. They just don't want them over there. And the kids see the bus drive by. They see the parades. They see the, again, they hear the cheering. They go to the games, all this kind of stuff. And the kid just, by the time he's done with homeschooling, he hates it. He hates his parents. He hates what they were taught. And they find out that God wasn't real according to the way they were taught. It's a mess. But, like I say, this is not about compromise. This is not about homeschooling, even though it was up to this point. It's about compromise. They're not going to force this thing on a willingly basis. We are going to compromise with the world, and we're going to do it willingly. We just talked about this last week. People are being bewitched. This is a subtle change that's taking place. We're being deceived by vain words, fair speeches, flattery, peace. The peace talks of peace. Pleasures and fun is the big one. So, as I was thinking about this over these last couple days and weeks and stuff like that, I go back to my favorite guy in the Bible for my illustrations here. And we've been over this before. We're not going to do the whole thing this morning. We're going to do a different little approach. And this is Nehemiah. This is Nehemiah. Let's look at the things that went after Nehemiah. And I believe that we're past some of those things already. We're in the final stages before we give in or jump over or just at least get involved with this enemy that we have. So are we at the last couple stages? And if you remember my Nehemiah stuff, you know what I'm talking about. And if you don't, you go to the book of Nehemiah in the first six or seven chapters. Nehemiah wants to build a wall because Jerusalem has fallen to shreds. It's been destroyed and all that stuff. And there's some attacks on him to keep him from building the wall. And those attacks are the exact same things that take place in our lives when we try to do something different and change our lives like Paul says he would have us to do. So instead of making those changes, we fight all the time. And this is about, look at Galatians chapter 5. Let's get back into the book. Let's go to Galatians chapter 5. And it says here, I thought I had it ready here. Galatians chapter 5, verse 7, where he says, ye did run well. Who did hinder you that ye should not obey the truth? What's happening to us as we all give in to things? And the hard thing with this is, you know, people, when we're compromising and we're giving in, we're being bewitched and we're being deceived, we don't even know it. That's the thing. So when a preacher comes along and preaches it, you get mad at him. Well, that certainly isn't us you're talking about. Sure it is. Look back a year. Look back 2 years. Are you stronger? Are you weaker? Are you doing less? Are you doing more? How's your standards that you started to teach? Better? Stronger? Weaker? Gone? Something's happening. And I'm just going to try to preach this thing, and it's not according to Dr. It's according to Paul. It's not according to Dr. Pete. It's not according to Dr. Jack. It's not according to Dr. Doug. It's not according to Dr. Sam. It's according to a rightly divided King James Bible, and it's plain and simple. There's nothing better for practicality out of a Bible than the first six, seven chapters of Nehemiah. And I know there's other things, but this is about as practical and applicable as we can find for illustration. In order for him to be building this wall, he had to be different. And his goal was to please God. That would be us, is to please God. His goal was to protect his people. And while he was doing this, these other people were always around him. So this is why we can look to Nehemiah here. Now, I don't understand why people care about what we do with our kids, about what we do homeschool, whether we change the way we dress, whether we go to these places or don't go to these places. Some people don't go to restaurants because they serve alcohol. Well, I guess you're going to quit eating out, that kind of thing, which is fine. If that's what they want to do, then fine. Why do people care about other people's lives when they're trying to do something right? Okay, so they want to eat healthy. Well, that's their choice. I mean, fine. And I've done it. We just go, oh, you're missing a good burger. By the way, the burgers out here in South Dakota, the meat out here is absolutely cow, cattle, steer, heifer. I don't know, whatever those words are for those kind of animals out there. It just tastes absolutely, no special seasoning, no nothing. Just good old-fashioned Angus beef fed off the prairie. Oh, good stuff. Okay, so I want you to look at Nehemiah here this morning, and I want you to check yourself out to see if you're compromising. And like I say, you're not going to know it if you are, but do we have to compromise? We have to remember that the enemy hasn't changed any. They're just changing their routine. Homeschoolers, be aware of that stuff. So let's go to Nehemiah chapter 1 and try to just highlight some stuff. We're not going to go through the whole thing. We're going to jump right to where we're at today. Just a couple of review things here. So the superintendent here is Tobiah. His name is Tobiah. And the principles I would apply to these things would be Sanballat. We got these two guys, Sanballat and Tobiah, that are just not happy with Nehemiah for what he's trying to do. Look at chapter 1, verse 4. Now, are there any of us Nehemiahs, Nehemiahettes? And I got to ask that. You know, look at verse 3. Let's look at verse 3. And they said unto me, the remnant that are left of the captivity, that's Jerusalem, there in the province are in great affliction and reproach. The wall of Jerusalem also is broken down, and the gates thereof are burned with fire. So, if you're any kind of a Nehemiah, you realize life today just stinks. The world is doing what it's doing. The homeschoolers are falling apart. The public schools are horrible. The churches are a mess. The music is horrible. The lies that are floating around are everywhere. Parenting stinks. They just have no clue. They're too lazy. They're too busy. Both people are working. Kids are horrible. They don't take any authority. They don't take any direction. I mean, it sounds really Eeyore-ish, but is it any different? Those that we've all homeschooled in our era, going back 5-10 years, they're not interested. They hated homeschool. They realized that God was a fake. He's not real because we taught them the Great Commission stuff, and that's the wrong gospel. So God wasn't there like we said he would be. We all prayed and tried to do things, and look what's happened. So they know it's not right. So are they looking for the truth? No, they're done. They're out of it. And I speak with personal experience here. So it's a mess. It's a mess. And look at verse 4. Jeremiah says, when I heard these words, I sat down and wept and mourned certain days and fasted and prayed before the God of heaven. Old Testament fasting. So Nehemiah was upset. Are you upset? Are you not happy? Are you just living with it so that's the way it's going to be? And we're just backing off and doing our thing. Let our kids be who our kids will be. Or whatever. And I'm not talking about you sticking your nose in somebody else's life. I'm talking about yours. And then it goes through 5 through 11. The rest of that chapter is Nehemiah's prayer about this whole thing, how they've messed up, and we have dealt corruptly against God himself and have not kept the commandments. And Nehemiah knew that they had all messed up, not just them, but even himself. And look at chapter 2, verse 12 here. And I rose in the night, and I and some few men with me, I need to teach Nehemiah grammar here, and neither told I any man what my God had put in my heart to do at Jerusalem. This is kind of a pastoral thing in some respects, because a pastor should be concerned about what he sees with his church people. But it doesn't do any good. But anyway, that's what we're supposed to be able to do. So you're a father. You look around you. You're a mother. You look around you. Maybe you're a niece of somebody, or an auntie, or a uncle, or something, and you see what's going on within your own family or relatives or whatever. And does it not stir you? Remember a couple weeks ago I talked about Paul was stirred. Are we being stirred anymore? Are we just giving up and letting the fall? And if we are, I'm telling you, you're compromising and you're giving in little by little. And you'll see some example here with Nehemiah and Tobiah and Sanballat. So here we go. Look at chapter 3, verse 19. Is this the same kind of response that we had here ourselves? When Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the servant, the Ammonite, and Geshem the the Arabian heard it, they laughed us to scorn and despised us and said, what is this thing that ye do when ye rebel against the king? So Nehemiah was challenged. He was scorned. He was despised. And they challenged him with his loyalty, kind of a thing. So look at verse 20. Here's his answer. Then answered I them and said unto them, the God of heaven, he will prosper us. Therefore we are his servants, will arise and build. Now, we're going to look at these things like, is this, here's what Nehemiah did. I'm going to ask you, have you responded that way? Do you respond to the fact that, listen, the God of heaven, he'll take care of me. He's not going to take care of me physically because we know we're in the kingdom of God. And yet I think sometimes there's still some kind of way he watches, he helps with his wisdom and the whole thing to not prosper financially, but he'll take care of us one way or another here. It says, therefore we, his servants, will arise and build. Okay, so we know that God's going to take care of us one way or another. We know that the judgment seat's come up. We know that the eternity is coming up. We know these things. And we know all the blessings that we're supposed to have spiritually. We understand all these things. We know that it pleases God to follow Paul's writings. And that's what we're trying to do. And persecution. It's going to be hard. It's going to be hard to live this way. But listen, God's going to take care of me. This King James Bible, it's the Word of God, and it's going to take care of me through this whole mess. And he says, and then he says to them, but ye have no portion, nor right, nor memorial in Jerusalem. And not only is it none of your business, you don't even belong here. So, is that how we respond to people? Maybe not being rudely, but you know these people, it's none of their business, and this is what you're doing to please God, to follow Paul. So we say that to ourselves. Do we answer these things correctly? I got to make a note change here for my type-up notes here. Got the wrong chapter there. Okay. Now, look at verse chapter 4, verse 1. But it came to pass that when Sanballat heard that we builded the wall, he was wroth and took great indignation and mocked the Jews. So there's another response from somebody else now. He was angry. He was wroth. I mean, he was ticked big time. And took great indignation. And he mocked the Jews for doing this kind of a thing. So we're despised, we're mocked. And let me say this. These people still, today, that we're dealing with, that we think that we're getting along with now, maybe you're in the community more, maybe you're in a club or something, and you're hanging around the crowd more, all this kind of stuff, they still don't like what you believe. And some of them are wroth. They don't like it. They're very upset. They take great indignation that you would even be who you are, the church you go to, or what you believe, or how you're dressed, or the way you behave, or whatever, or things you won't do. They despise that. They still do. Now, my point is, the teachers out there, the government, they still hate parental involvement. They don't want parental involvement. I hear it all the time in the school. The teachers say, we would do much better if the parents would just stay out of it and let us handle the kids. We're professionals, and they're not. And listen, I used to think that way. Totally used to think that way. And when it comes to music and band, I still can kind of think that way, because how many parents out there can play band and they understand music, understand the language of music, they understand the biblical aspect of music? There's hardly anybody out there. So I think along those lines. But when it comes to education and reading and writing and arithmetic and all that stuff and school and social practices and all this junk, they don't want the parents involved. But when they come, you ought to see the smiles the teachers have. You ought to see how they kiss up to them, and they just kind of, oh, yeah, here you go. You know, I have you here. Here's what we'd like to do. What do you think? It's just baloney. They don't believe this. They hate parents. They do not want parental involvement. They do not want PTAs. They do not want parent meetings. They don't want this stuff. They hate it. They despise it. You're a Paul person. You got people in your community that know that you're different. They still don't like it, but they're letting you come over to play with their kids. You're involved in the community. You're doing something in sports. You're doing something in local music. You're doing something in local meetings. No, they don't like what you are. They don't like who you are. I'm telling you, don't fall for that baloney. They're envious. They killed Jesus Christ because of envy. Why didn't they want what he had? They didn't care what he had. He was the Savior. They didn't care. They still killed him. They took care of Joseph. Do you think they were trying to help Joseph? No, they hated Joseph. They don't want Paul. They don't want what it is that Paul teaches. They don't want to have anything to do with that. And they still don't, and they never will. So look at chapter 4, verse 6. So he says, okay, so built we the wall, and all the wall was joined together unto the half thereof, for the people had a mind to work. Do you have a mind to work? Do you have a mind? Did you desire, be desired and decided to make these stands for what Paul's teaching? Well, I know you do, because you wouldn't be listening to me after all those years if you didn't have a desire to do what's right according to the Bible. So I'm not challenging that so much. But how much have we lost our mind to work? I don't mean I lost our mind to work, but I mean, have we lost that mind to work? Do we want to make this thing work? Now, look at chapter 4, verse 7. This is the first. Now, we're not going to park in these things. This is chapter 4, verse 7 and 8. This is that they developed a conspiracy against Nehemiah and the people. Well, we know that there's been a conspiracy against the King James Bible. There's a conspiracy against the risen Savior. There's a conspiracy against Paul and his teachings. But you know there's a conspiracy against you? There are relatives, there are friends, there are church people, there are neighbors, there are community people that conspire against you. You know they've talked about you. They know when they see you change, they get together and they talk about it. And they're thrilled. There is a conspiracy against us. So Nehemiah and these guys had a conspiracy. Look at verse 9. Had a conspiracy against them. Look at verse 9. Here is Nehemiah's... Look at verse 8, I guess. And conspired all of them together to come and to fight against Jerusalem and to hinder it. Okay, so we see in verse 9, nevertheless, we made our prayer unto our God. Okay, and set a watch against them day and night because of them. Is that what we've done? Have we set a watch? Are we watching for this anymore? Or are we just enjoying ourselves more? And I'm talking about this way because I know too many people that are compromising and they're going backwards and they're trying to be part of something. They're tired of the battle. They're tired of being alone. They're tired of people being mad at them. They're tired of the crowd around them being stirred because of you, who you are. And we're supposed to be the ones stirred. That was last week's message. So my question is right now, verse 9, have you prayed? Do you still talk to God about the battles you've got? Have you set a watch against them? Are you watching for people that are trying to take you back down? Because remember, Paul doesn't tell us to go hide in the woods and stay away from everything. He tells us to avoid certain people and not have no company with certain places and people and not to participate in certain things. Sure he does, because it doesn't please God when we're doing that stuff. Do we care? Have we asked God, listen, God, I know this doesn't make you happy. This is not pleasing to you. I'm going to do it anyway. Is that how you pray? Have you even prayed at all? Are you watching for these people? They like me now. They're talking to me now. Do you know they still hate what you believe? They still hate it? Look at verse chapter 4. Look at verse 10. Here's another one. This is the second thing they had. Nehemiah dealt with here. The rubbish in their lives. Verse 10. And Judah said, the strength of bearers of burdens is decayed, and there is much rubbish, so that we're not able to build the wall. What have you been doing lately that's caused this rubbish in your life? Because in verse 11, 12, 13, and 4, 13, 11 and 12... the enemy slips in during all that rubbish time. And if you haven't read this stuff, you read it, and you'll find amazing stuff in Nehemiah's first six chapters. So, look at verse 14. And I looked and rose up and said unto the nobles and to the rulers and to the rest of the people, be not ye afraid of them. Remember the Lord, which is great and terrible, and fight for your brethren, your sons and your daughters, your wives and your houses. And that's not happening to people anymore. Nobody's fighting for anything like that. So, you go down to verse 17 here, I think is where it is. Yep. And I would go up to 16, and it came to pass that they got it back together again. Okay, so Nehemiah inspired them with this, listen, let's do right here. So, we're not going to park in that thing so much. I want to get to the other one here in a minute. Look at verse 17 here. Here's what they did in response to this whole rubbish thing. They which build it on the wall, and they that bear burdens with those that laid it, everyone with his hands wrought in the work and with the other hand held a weapon. You're trying to change your life. You're trying to live to Paul. You're trying to work in a store. I'm trying to teach in a public school or whatever, in these little grades anyway. And we need our weapon with us. We need to be following that book. We need to do the best we can of what Paul teaches us. Paul doesn't teach us to go out and meet idiots and to yell and scream at people that God hates fags. He doesn't tell us to do that. But he tells us to stand for what's right while we're amongst them. Well, I just want to warn you this morning that while we're amongst them and they're amongst us, be careful not to compromise. If you compromise, you're not going to be persecuted. And Paul says they're supposed to be persecuted, mocked, angry. They're not going to like what we're doing. So why do we think that we can do it differently? Why do we think that we can be who we are, dress like we are, talk like we do, don't go to these places and do things? Why do we think that we are not going to be disliked for that stuff, even within our own families? Why do you think they're going to? They don't. They're allowing that. I can't get into that. They're They don't like it. They still don't like it. But I think they see. I think this world sees that if we just hang in there long enough, we're coming back to them. And now the laws are going to make us come back to them in schools. And the people are going to go, phew, I needed the help. I wasn't doing very good. And I'm sad to say, parents, you do need some help out there. You're not getting cooperation. It's expensive. It's a lot of work. But you're going to turn them over to the enemy. That's what's happening. Okay, so get going here. Number three here, look at chapter 5. All of chapter 5 is about finances. Isn't that weird? They get into a money hassle. Fuss over finances, I call it when I do the sermon on that thing. So are you so concerned about finances that you're compromising? Do you need that second income? Do you need that third income, that fourth income? Do you even need to have your kids work so they can help pay around? Now, in some cases, we are in that kind of straits with people. I realize that. And life is cruel. Life is rotten. But how many people are choosing the finance issue so they have more money so they can do more things, buy more things, and buy more games and videos and cigarettes and alcohol and parties this and party that and go here and go there, gas prices the way it is and all this kind of stuff, and you do what you got to do to make the money? Well, you're compromising. You know what God designed your family to be. You know what you're supposed to be doing as a father and a wife and a mother and all that kind of stuff, best you can in this world. So we don't worry about chapter 5. That talks about the compromise. It talks about the money issue. Here's what I wanted to get to this morning, and it's in chapter 6. I know I'm talking fast again. This stuff just gets me going here, I guess. I want to get it all in. I've got kind of a time basis here. Chapter 6 is what I wanted to get into. Now, do I need to review any of this stuff? We're compromising all over the country, all over the world. There's compromising everywhere, and they're trying to make it happen. You know, it's a lot like the Middle Ages, the Dark Ages. Satan was against the King James Bible, so he killed people that had them. All it did was made them stronger. So now what does he do? He subtly takes it away, exchanges it with something else, and people don't even know what's happening. So we know that. What happened in America? We got people that are 70, 80 years old, guys wearing ponytails and earrings, ladies dressing about as immodest as you can for some, just, and they don't even know they've been changed. It's what compromise does. It takes us down. The falling away isn't just a suddenly where everybody just quits. No, they're falling back into the pattern of compromise. Now, look at chapter 6, verse 2. Here we go. Now, you know, we've been through 4 different things here? We've been through conspiracy. We've been through the rubbish in our own lives. It lets them sneak in our lives because they're there to help. You know how that is. Fussing over finances. And I really wish I didn't have to hurry through those because those are marvelous. Those things that happen to us. I'll say it again. They're conspiring against us. They're rubbish in their own lives. They sneak in and they try to help us in our mess, our difficulties in lives, and the world's out there helping. And the whole financial thing, what a hassle. And the government be glad to help you when it comes to finances. They'll be glad to give you the money, this bonus money. They'll be glad all the strings that are attached. Don't worry about those strings that are attached. Right. But anyway, here we go. Chapter 6, verse 2. Sanballat and Geshem sent unto me, saying, oh, by the way, if you notice in this thing, Sanballat and Tobiah, they have more and more people help them as they go into these chapters. More and more people get involved helping them. So it just grows up. There's more people against you now than there ever have been. Okay, Sanballat and Geshem sent unto me, saying, come, let us meet together in some of the villages in the plain of Ono. And then Nehemiah knows here, but they thought to do me mischief. He knew that. Why don't you come over for dinner? I'd love to have you. It's nice to see you. And you know they're going to pop a video on you that you don't want your kids to see, that you don't want to get caught seeing. You know that they're going to want to do something that you don't do. Here's what it says. Come, let us meet together. Let's play some ball together. That's fun. We can set aside our differences. Let's go to a movie. Let's go to a restaurant that does dancers and jolly. Let's just get together, you know? Come on. Yet they sent unto me, oh no, it's verse 3, and I sent messengers unto them, saying, here's what his answer was, I'm doing a great work, so that I cannot come down. Why should the work cease whilst I leave it and come down to you? That is a fantastic answer. Is that your answer? When you're around these people that are wanting to compromise, I'm not saying to be an idiot or a jerk or anything like that, but is this your answer? To yourself, I'm doing something. I'm doing right here. I'm pleasing God. Believe it or not, I honestly believe, according to Paul, I'm pleasing God right now with how well what I'm wearing, where I'm not going, where I'm at, whatever. I can't come over. I can't go do this in the town. I can't do this. Why should I stop what I'm trying to do to please God and get away from that just so I can be down with you? This is Nehemiah. This isn't your average Christian. This is Nehemiah. Are we Nehemiahs? Are we doing the right thing? Is it a great work to do the right thing in this perverse, corrupt nation, crooked nation, community, your family? Yeah, but if I do this, I'll get, that's called persecution. And look at verse 4. Yet they sent unto me four times. They don't give up. And I answered them after the same manner. That's a marvelous answer, you know. Listen, I'm teaching music. Here's what I'd like you to teach. Well, I'm sorry, I cannot teach the kids this kind of music. I haven't had to do that yet. I'm just, you know, I'm working my program, doing my thing, not making any big problems or anything like that. But I know what the national curriculum wants them to learn, and the state curriculum. They don't know it, so I'm okay so far. I'm trying to teach them the right thing about music. But someday they're going to say, hey, here, why don't you come over? Let's talk about this stuff. Let's try to incorporate. No, we're doing a great job. We're doing what's right. And I'll have the meeting because I'll have to. But you go through the same thing with all your bosses. Here's what they want you to do. And some of them, I'm sure they've asked you to do some things that are just wrong. And in some cases, you end up doing it. This guy's, you know, that's life, I suppose. And yet, when it comes to our personal testimony, here, come on to my church. Listen, if you come to my church, I'll come to yours. You liar. You will not. Here, look at these Bibles, and let's talk about this, and let's talk about that. Come on over, let's talk. Well, we'll come over, but we're going to tell you what the King James Bible says. Here, look at this. I'm going to give you this $90 blouse. Oh, fancy. It's got the name Calvin and Hobbes on it or something. You know, some fancy designer. You know, $5,000 wedding dress, $20,000 pair of pants, all this kind of stuff, you know. And, oh, this I would just look so nice and so beautiful. Wait a minute, it's not modest. I can't do this. And mom says, I'll pay for this. Well, I mean, there's all sorts of, you know the attacks you get. You know the subtle little compromising attempts. They haven't quit. And maybe you don't recognize them anymore because maybe you've compromised so much you don't even see the differences anymore. So anyway, they sent it to him four times. They tried him four times. So there's some serious compromising going on there. But he fights it. Now look at verse 5. What comes in amongst this compromise? Look what happens when Nehemiah says no. Then sent, and we time here, we're doing it right. Then sent Sanballat his servant unto me in the like manner the fifth time with an open letter in his hand. Wherein was written, it is reported among the heathen, and Geshmu saith it, that thou and the Jews think to rebel. For which cause thou buildest the wall, that thou mayest be their king, according to these words. Thou hast also appointed prophets to preach of thee at Jerusalem, saying, there is a king in Judah. See, they now they've got to slander the guy. So amongst this time, when you fight this compromise, they're going to slander you. They're going to say some things about you that are not true. Or they're probably going to say some things about you that are true, that you shouldn't have been doing, you shouldn't have been seen doing it, and they're going to use it against you. They're not happy to see you there. They're really happy to see you compromise. They want to just take you down. So, are you ready for the slander part? If he finishes verse 7, he slanders them, and he says, oh, by the way, now come now, therefore, let us take counsel together. So they'll slander you, they'll talk you down to get you to realize you better compromise, or they're going to expose you some more, or they're going to make more lies about you, they're going to give you a harder time. In other words, compromise or else. The schools, come over to us or we're going to take your kid totally. Wear this or you're going to have to just wear junk. I'll pay for this. Let's go here. Let's do this. You know, according to Nehemiah, that they'll slander you, they'll make you look bad to get you to come their way. There's a mean war out there. And I'm sad to say this is the brethren we're talking about here in lots of cases. Community is the same thing, but why should the brethren be this way? Okay, now look at verse 8. Then I sent unto him, saying, there are no such things done as thou sayest, but thou feignest them out of thine heart. So Nehemiah says, listen, you're lying, don't bug me, but look at verse 9. For they all made us afraid, saying their hands shall be weakened from the work, that it be not done. Their attempts at compromise, their attempts at slander, well, still, he said they're afraid. Their hands will be weakened from the work, and it won't get done. This is a battle that we get weakened in, and after a while, we quit being that way. We're willing to compromise. You're not going to compromise the other way. You're not going to suddenly wear nothing, hardly. You're not going to suddenly go here and be drinking with everybody. You're not going to suddenly get out there and play what they're doing. You're not going to suddenly go to crummy X-rated, R-rated movies. But you're still going to be willing to not say no, and you're going to still slip. Remember the leaven thing. One thing at a time. Compromise is all about leavening. One little thing at a time. And Nehemiah's answers to all these challenges are what I want you to know this morning. He had good answers. And here he's actually afraid that this attempt at compromise and this slander is going to weaken his people. I'm afraid that the battles that you all are fighting out there, myself included, is going to weaken you and you're going to give in. Going to keep you from getting the job done. What job? Well, the job that you've chosen because you know things are bad in your life and you're trying to make some differences to please God. You know it's a great work. You're not a great work, but it is a great thing you're trying to do in this crummy world. And you know that you're going to have to stand firm. And you know the persecution is going to come from it. And I know that hardly anybody's going to talk about this sermon because we're compromising. We're probably happier. After a while, we can give in and go, well, I'm okay. They haven't seen everything yet. I haven't gone to the bad places yet. I'm not drinking or anything. I'm not, you know, I'm not working in some dump shop. I'm not, you know, the list goes on and on. Now, let's see, where are we at? Here are my notes here. 10 to 12. We read 10. Look at verse 10. Afterward, I came into the house of Shemaiah, the son of Deliah, the son of Mehibel, who was shut up. And he said, let us meet together in the house of God, within the temple, and let us shut the doors of the temple, for they will come to slay thee. Yea, in the night they will come to slay thee. And I said, should such a man as I flee? And who was there that, being as I am, would go into the temple to save his life? You see what they're doing there? They're actually trying to get him to think that they'll take care of you. That's why I feel so bad about saying some kids belong in a public school. No, they really don't. I mean, they'll destroy them in a public school. But I can't stand to see kids getting no education at home. And I'm not even big on education. I don't want it to become your God. I don't want it to become some, I don't know what the scholar stuff, but you need to learn how to read. You need to learn how to learn. You need to learn how to study. You need to learn how to, you know, do this stuff. And they're denying this stuff to our kids in their homes. So the public school is saying, listen, you come over, let's get together here. We'll help you. Because the world out there, the world wants to kill your kids and destroy your children. We'll help you. Oh, we'll help you. These churches would love to have us get involved in their churches again. The community would love to have you get back in with them again. And come on, we'll help you. It'd be a lot of fun. We'll help you. We'll be there. We'll make your life a whole lot better all of a sudden. And because we have not taken our stand and don't realize it's a great work of God and we're doing it for God, we're willing to give in and compromise. Or parents that want to make their little kids happy, but don't make them unhappy, don't make them sad. Oh, I wish I could give you some illustrations that I know is going on in homes. It's just horrendous. It just bothers me. Why does it bother you? I don't know. I guess that's the pastor. I don't know. I got to say to myself, hey, don't let it bother you. So I go out and mow the lawn and talk to my little birds, a sign I'm getting old as I got my birds outside my window. So, no. We care. Where's that at in our lives? Okay, anyway, get back to, I'm rambling now. So, they think they can help you. And my point is that we're willing to take the help because we've been so messed up. Why are we so messed up? Because you're lovers of pleasure more than lovers of God. You're more into the fun of life than the enjoyment of life. You're more into what's more comfortable and cooler than what's right. That's what's going on here. Now, if we were to hang in there with this stuff, we're almost done here. We're going to hang in there with this stuff, and we're down to the last thing. The conspiracy, we already know the conspiracy. We already know the financial thing. We already know that whenever we mess up and have rubbish in our lives, they move in like flies and maggots in a flash with a cut. Anytime we trip up and stumble, they just move in. They're happy about that. And the money thing, we need to have money. You know, you're going to have to get a job, and well, the men should get a job and men should be able to handle the war that's out there. The women belong in the home doing that stuff. And I know there's exemptions. I know that uncles and everybody else, I realize that, but we just see what the devil's doing too. And if we hang in there and watch for this compromise, I think compromise is the hardest thing to not do. Because what damn it, what's it going to hurt to go over and do this a little bit? What's it going to do to turn this on? What harm is that going to be? Well, look at yourself in 2 months. What are you watching now? What are you doing now? Where are you going now? How are you playing now? What's going on? It's compromise. It's little by little compromise. And they want us to do it. Now, if we hang in there, if you hang in there, look at verse 15. Okay, Nehemiah finishes the wall. Okay, and that's good. Okay, you die. You get old, whatever happens, and you stuck with it. You stuck with the modesty. You stuck with the voice. You stuck with the concern. You stuck with where you didn't go and all this kind of stuff. Someday, these people are going to realize verse 16. And it came to pass that when all our enemies heard thereof that they got the wall done, and all the heathen that were about us saw these things, they saw that you stayed, you didn't change your clothes, you didn't change your behavior, you didn't go to these places all of a sudden. You stood strong in your King James Bible, you stood strong on Paul, you finally said no to something within the church because you have to someday, whatever. It says here, they were much cast down in their own eyes. So see, you don't please them. They don't give up. What made them so depressed? They perceived that this work was wrought of our God. Isn't that amazing? I mean, they're bummed because they saw that it was something God wanted. Now, all these things that you're trying to change in your life, people are not going to be thrilled. They don't care if it works. They will cast down in their own eyes till they realize that what you were doing was right. Now, for those that don't know the rest of the story here, you think it's over, the wall's done. Nehemiah resisted conspiracy. He resisted the rubbish stuff in their lives. He got people to clean their lives up. He resisted the financial issue. He resisted the compromise. He resisted the slander. He resisted their attempt at showing you that if you come over and be with us, we'll help you. He realized that's not true. He got the job done. What's the job you're trying to do? I go through the list again. I talk about this stuff. I repeat it over and over and over because I just want you to hear this. That when you get done and you've done your job that day, let's just look at this one day at a time. Okay, you're gonna have all those things out there. There's people out there that are against you because of the conspiracy thing. The finances are gonna be an issue. And something's gonna happen in your day, and yet when the day's over, did you wear something you shouldn't have? Did you go someplace you shouldn't have? Did you talk like you shouldn't have? Did you act like you shouldn't have? If you stayed there and you had a good, successful day, then, amen? No. 17, 18, and 19, they still keep bugging, Nehemiah. And one guy does. His name is Tobiah. It turns out that Tobiah is even related. Look at verse 19. They also reported his good deeds before me and uttered my words to him. And Tobiah sent letters to put me in fear. So people still talked to Tobiah. They still told people what was going on with Nehemiah. And he still wrote them threatening letters. They don't give up. I mean, they just don't give up. It's an amazing thing. See, I missed a little thing down there in verse 13 that during that time they offered to help. It was the fact that this guy was hired and paid for to get them because he wanted him to do something wrong. There we go. I missed that whole point. Verse 13. Backtrack a little bit here for a second. Going back to the slander, going back to the compromise, going back to they wanted to help you. Verse 13, it talks about the fact that Tobiah and Sanballat hired this guy. And it says here, therefore was he hired that I should be afraid and do so and sin. I mean, if they can't get you to compromise, they can't get you to slander, they're still going to get you to do something wrong. Go ahead, be the Christian you are. Go ahead, dress the way you are. Go ahead, don't watch this. Go ahead, don't do this. Go ahead, try to get your schooling. Try to get your life together. Try to do some things on a good basis that pleases God. And they're going to try to get you to do something wrong. Remember Jeremiah. You do something wrong, Jeremiah, they're looking for this kind of stuff. Oh, I messed that whole point in there, verse 13 and 12. I just hope you see that in there. Nehemiah is a fantastic encouragement to us to follow Paul. Now, Nehemiah is not written to us, but boy, we can sure learn from Nehemiah. We can learn that we are falling for this stuff. We are compromising. We don't even know it. And Nehemiah's answers should challenge us to answer the right thing and to stand. I don't care who it is. It's easy for me to say this. I'm not in the battle anymore, it seems like. I'm out of the pastoral thing. I'm not in Ohio. I'm not with people that are fighting. But I know what's going on out there in our web family. I know a lot of this stuff. And I'm sorry, I cannot ignore it. I can't let it happen. I'm frustrated. I'm preachy. I know what's going on in my own home, my own family. It's happening everywhere. People are compromising and giving in because we are tired. And we don't recognize the compromise. We think that they're caring for us. We think that they're trying to help us. No, they're not. They hate the risen Savior. They hate a King James Bible. They hate changing their lives. They hate being told that this is wrong. Because there still is wrong and right. Even though all things are lawful, it's still not expedient. It's still not edifying. It still could cause somebody else something that you could do that you have because you can cause somebody else to stumble. And that is still one of our challenges. We do it because we want to. It's our flesh. Or we do it, what's the other one I left out there? We got expedient, edify, cause somebody to stumble. And it's a power over us. We can't stop doing it. We all deal with these things. So, be a Nehemiah and look around you. See what's going on. And put your foot down if you can. It's going to cause trouble. They're not going to be happy with it. And the homeschoolers, you're about to blow it. The homeschoolers in this country in general have blown it, and they're going to blow it some more. And the school isn't going to make you do it. They're going to make you think that it's good. Come on, we'll help you. We'll make it so expensive for homeschooling that we'll have to help you. All the finances, all the conspiracy, all the compromise, all the slander, all the to get you to do something wrong. We're doing it. We're doing something wrong. We're not doing our job, homeschoolers. And Paul followers, we got to do our job and stand for what's right. It's a great work of God. And they're trying to take us down. And don't let them think that they love you. They don't like it. They hate it. They've always hated it. They always will hate it. So there you go.